Since 1949, May has been designated Mental Health Awareness Month, and May of 2022 finds us coping with spikes in rates of mental health cases. Pandemic conditions have a lot to do with this, but where teens are concerned, this was happening well before we knew anything about COVID-19. According to data from the Centers for Disease Control, in 2019, 13% of adolescents reported having a major depressive episode, a 60% increase over 2007. Emergency room visits by children and adolescents in that period also rose sharply for anxiety, mood disorders, and self-harm. And for people ages 10 to 24, suicide rates, stable from 2000 to 2007, leaped nearly 60% by 2018. On April 30th, Kentucky actress and activist Ashley Judd confirmed to the world that her mother, country music star Naomi Judd, had died, tweeting, "We lost our beautiful mother to the disease of mental illness." The news came only one day before Naomi Judd was to be inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame. In 2014, Naomi Judd was in Lexington to speak at the One Parent Scholar House, where single parents get the help they need to earn a college degree, and she could relate to that. And while in town, she made time to sit down for a chat about her extraordinary life with Bill Goodman, now executive director of Kentucky Humanities, but at the time, Bill was host of the KET interview program One-on-One. Bill and KET have shared the conversation with us.
Welcome. So nice to have you here.
I'm home.
You are. And I want to talk a little bit about that. That's something that I think people know that you have Kentucky roots, but I want to know a little bit more about that. But I'm also curious, you are so many things. We're all sort of defined by our labels at times. Mother and grandmother and activist and singer and performer, and it goes on and on and on. When you think of yourself, what do you think of first about who you are?
What a great question. I can tell a lot about an interviewer by the questions they ask.
Because you've done that yourself.
You're very well informed. Interesting question. It's always sort of curious to me if I'm standing in the wings of a theater, if I'm getting ready to go out and give a lecture, or if I'm just being introduced at some event, what they choose to stereotype, what labels they want to put on me. And I've always loved the moniker, the star next door. Mm. I'll never forget the first time someone introduced me that way. Mm. And I was supposed to bolt onto the stage then as soon as they introduced me. And it took me just a second because that felt so... I appreciated that because I know there's nothing different about me. It's just that I do some unusual things in my career. But to say the star... next door sort of connotes that I am every woman, and I really appreciate that because of the encyclopedic range of things I've done in my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me about your Kentucky connection and how much Kentucky is in the star next door.
Born and raised in Ashland, Kentucky. So... the roots are very deep. I know the ancestral lineage going back to my great-great-grandfather, who was he used his pension from the Civil War to buy the Jett home place in Louisa, Kentucky. Ricky Skaggs is from Cordell, which is close to us. So we claim ancestors. We're country cousins, as we as we like to say. So the roots are very deep, and I've hopefully imparted that to Winona and Ashley.
Yeah. Do you get back there often? I know you worked there, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, but do you go back and visit?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you,
our family aren't much for showing emotions.
Ah, is that a good thing?
No, it's not. I know I was talking to Dolly. Dolly's one of my favorite people on the planet. I'm very proud to call her a girlfriend. Dolly and Reba and I were talking one time, Reba McIntyre, and no one in our family was allowed to show emotion. Mm. It was just real bare bones, you know, just work hard. And there was no art form in the house. So because we were sort of squelched, I always felt like a big pinata walking around wishing somebody would break me open so I could spill out my secrets. Reba and Dolly and I have, as adults, been doing what we wanted to do as children, which is to express ourselves, to write songs, to be animated, to be entertainers.
But you're all for laying it on the table and talking about it and being expressive and and talking about one's life.
Dolly's made a career out of it. And gosh, it's been about 20 years ago, but I was over at Reba's house having supper, and coincidentally, she had a song on the radio that was a number one hit that week called "The Greatest Man I Never Knew," lived just down the hall, and she's referring to her dad, Clarky. His name was Clark. Again, rodeo family out of Stringtown, Oklahoma. But she began talking about the fact that he had never really told her he loved her. And that week, he had to go in for open-heart surgery. And as they were wheeling him literally into surgery, he looked up at her from his gurney and said, Reba, I love you. And as she was telling this to me, you know, the tears just came. And it's a generational thing, but I really think that shows like Oprah and all the self-help books and all that.
Some of what you've done too, don't you think? I mean, you've sort of promoted that on your in your career, on your radio program. I mean, wasn't that sort of you zeroed in on what people were thinking and needed to express and couldn't express, that sort of thing. What do you call what you do now? When you meet people and in an audience, and are you trying to get them to sort of give you some feedback? They're in the audience to see and hear you, and I see you sort of trying to pull out of them some emotion.
Sure. You know, it's like going to the zoo. Who's watching who? And if you know anything about me, you know that I'm absolutely audience participation. It's Ashley, my actress daughter, calls it the pinch and the ouch. Yeah, as an actress, she knows her lines, but she doesn't do anything until her cohort gives her the pinch so that she can respond appropriately. Mm-hmm. And when I'm with people that, for instance, today I'm going to be talking about some stuff that's probably going to make me cry, some real autobiographical stuff, some chronological stuff that...
Why haven't you talked about it before?
It hasn't been the right venue. This is an extraordinary situation. The One Parent Scholar House... Wow, if I had known that there was an organization like this, it would have changed the trajectory of my life. If it had existed back when I was in need, because I survived domestic violence,
It's tough still. Winona and Ashley were born and raised in Ashland?
Winona was born in the same room, same hospital, King's Daughters Hospital in Ashland, Kentucky, attended by the same nurse that my mom had me when she was 18. But Ashley was born
That's
in California.
Amazing. Yeah, okay.
I married Ashley's dad, and he had just graduated from Transylvania, so we got sent to California. Of course, I'd never been out of Ashland, Kentucky, so that was a whole new.
So your Kentucky
world.
Roots are really, I mean, they run deep.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're proud of that.
Oh, absolutely.
The organizations that you're affiliated with are a long, long list, but a couple of those that are Kentucky-related. You've been involved really as an activist with mountaintop removal.
Mm-hmm.
And did you become yourself interested in that, or did Ashley sort of learn about that and educate the rest of the family and get you involved in that?
I think Ashley and I came to it about the same time. When you're from Eastern Kentucky and you see firsthand how they're raping the land and pillaging the mountaintops, you can't not get involved.
So even though you're this lovely person and performer and star and so successful, you sort of have this this political thing in your gut, too, that you feel very passionately about. And this is just one of the examples. I mean, feeding the poor, poverty in Kentucky especially, mountaintop removal, there are other areas, too. So you don't shy away from the controversial, do you?
No. Justice for all.
Is it sort of uncomfortable to you to get politically involved in something? I know you had some feelings about Ashley getting involved in the Senate race here, and did you breathe a sigh of relief when she decided not to?
I did, but that was because I'm her mother, and I. Well, first of all, we went to Washington. Ashley and our family psychologist Ted Klontz. We went up there. Numerous times to sort of check out the lay of the land. And Ashley and I shared a suite so that we could, in the center, have the living room area where we would have our meetings and all. So at the end of the day, Ashley and I were, I can't find a strong enough word. We were so horrified at the sociopathy, what we saw going on in Washington, D.C. You have to understand that Ashley has such a pure heart. Ashley's like me. I think coming from Kentucky, you have a sensibility about what certain needs are, because Kentucky is a state that needs so many different justice programs. But Ashley comes into everything with a certain amount of naivete because she's brilliant. You know, she has a degree from Harvard. She went back to Harvard. I'll never forget, we were having supper at the supper table one night, and it's sort of become a legend in Judd lore now. It started years ago when I thought she was going to go to the Peace Corps, mm-hmm. straight from graduating the University of Kentucky. She'd been accepted in the Peace Corps. And she says, Mama, pass the salt. I think I'll go to Hollywood and become an actress. And lo and behold, she did. And what an actress she is. So all these years later, she still does that to me. Like a couple of years ago, she said, Mama, pass the salt. I think I'll go back to Harvard and get a degree in global economics.
Yeah.
So when at the supper table, she said, Mama, pass the salt. I think I'll go to Washington. Why don't you come with me and let's check out the landscape, mm-hmm. see if Mitch McConnell is still viable and see what we can do to unseat him. So I never know what she's going to do, but I know that it's prompted by such a pure heart, and she knows her stuff.
did you and Ashley find in Washington most of us outside of the Beltway and outside in the heartland in Kentucky have now discovered, which is just almost an impossible place to be, and gridlock. Millennials, the young poll just out of Harvard found that these young people, 18 to 29, are completely, they've lost faith in the system. They don't think Washington works. Did you find that just in the time that you were there sort of trying to make a decision on what to do?
Yeah.
Was it exasperating, exhausting for you?
It was beyond exasperating. Let me find a stronger word. He used the word horrified. I think that comes closer because these are elected officials, and they are supposed to be our representatives. And one of the things that's happened in this country is the bipartisanship. You know, you're a Republican or you're a Democrat. I personally am a registered independent. I vote on the issues. What a concept, huh? Mm. I thought that that's what the two-party system was supposed to be for, you know, whoever came up with the best idea. But at the end of the day, Ashley and I were so, I guess the word is mortified, devastated by the lack of sincerity, the lack of awareness, the lack of a willingness to listen to the other side. We were just, I mean, sometimes we'd cry, to tell you the truth.
Well, let's talk about you. This medically documented miracle is really quite fascinating to me, and I'm sure a lot of other people. You contracted hepatitis C, fatal for a lot of people, but not you. In the dark of night or the early morning dawn, do you think about that and what really happened to you and why you survived, why you are a survivor?
I think about it every minute. I do. Before the singing career, I was a registered nurse, and I worked in ICU. And if you know anything about ICU, and it's basically a trauma situation. It's like the ER. You subjugate yourself. You get needle sticks. You have bodily fluids. So the best guess is that I got a contaminated needle stick in the early 80s when I was working as an RN. And it's a retrograde virus, so it didn't actually fulminate. It didn't manifest with symptomology until I was into my singing career. Fast forward 10 years. So here I am, finally figured something out. You know, life is not fair. Nobody said it was going to be. But here I am at the top of my game. I finally have friends. I have something I can do. Winona and I have found a way to communicate. I've been able to buy Ashley a house that has a thermostat. All she ever wanted was just to have a normal childhood, bless her heart. So all of a sudden, which has been one of the hallmarks of my life, you know, just about the time I start to figure something out, it explodes into chaos. So, yep, the Mayo Clinic tells me I have 3 years to live, and hepatitis C is called the silent killer. It will actually, in the next decade, kill four times more Americans than AIDS will.
Well, I want to touch on a couple of more things, and this might have helped you sort of deal with this medical emergency that you had and the surviving that. And it's sort of your unfailing optimism and spirit and hope about yourself and others. Was that instilled in you early on? How did all that occur? just don't wake up one day and say, pass the salt, I'm going to be an optimist, do you?
I have asked myself that countless times, because I can't point to anyone in our family that, in fact, there's a real pathology. There's a real pessimism in our family. Depression, and I battle depression. Ashley battles depression. We've been pretty vocal about that. Mm-hmm. But let me jump forward here and say that one of my dear friends, and I'm very proud to call him a friend, his name is Dr. Francis Collins. Mm-hmm. He decoded the genome. Mm-hmm. He's that guy. He decoded mm-hmm. the human genome mm-hmm. in the year 2000. He was on the cover of Time magazine and one of the most brilliant scientists that ever lived. He's been a friend for 23 years. He has taught me that, and he's the expert in genes, so he would know that really only a third of our genetic makeup is responsible for all this stuff, that we actually get only a third of our genes responsible. Two-thirds of it is up to us to decide how those genes are expressed. He came to visit me. In fact, it's the first vacation he's ever had. Came to the farm to stay for a week.
Oh, so nice.
Of course, I pestered him about all this. But he's taught me that we're really in such a seat of power. And he's helped me with my depression. And of course, I share this with Ashley in battling depression, which is an illness. You know, it's not a mental... depression is just like diabetes or thyroid or whatever. Your brain doesn't make enough of the good feel-good chemicals. So you, just like with diabetes, you have to, if your body doesn't, your pancreas doesn't produce insulin, you have to take insulin. If your thyroid isn't active, you have to take thyroxine. So if your brain doesn't make the good feel-good chemicals to give you a level playing field, then you need to take antidepressants, SSRIs or MEOI inhibitors. But it's not a character flaw, is what I'm trying to
say.
Depression is not a character flaw. It's a very real disease, just like heart disease. In fact, one out of four Americans every year will have a mental illness.
Naomi Judd, in a 2014 conversation on the KET program One-on-One with Bill Goodman. We edited this for time. Links to the entire interview are available on the websites of KET and Kentucky Humanities, as well as the Eastern Standard site at esweku.org. Along with her daughters, Winona and Ashley, Ms. Judd is survived by her husband, Larry Strickland, who was a backup singer for Elvis Presley.
Grandpa, tell me about the good old days. Sometimes it feels like this world's gone crazy. Grandpa, take me back to yesterday, when the line between right and wrong didn't seem so. Lovers really fall in love to stay, stand beside each other.